Okay, great. So yeah, so let me begin with a probably at this point totally spurious overview of the kind of framework of context of the question that I'm talking about. So basically, all of this business about topological theories and topological field theories and symmetry extensions and stuff like that. I think from the condensed matter point of view, one way to describe this is to say that we talk about two kinds of sort of fractionalization. One kind of fractionalization is to do with fractional statistics. So here's a little illustration of everyone's favorite pedestrian example of fractional statistics, which is an Ising gauge theory, right? So I have an E particle and an M particle, and the E goes around the M, and there's a Berry phase of minus one, okay? And the other kind of fractionalization is associated with what we call symmetry protection, okay? In two dimensions, this can, for example, result in systems which have edge modes which can't be gapped unless you break a symmetry. Okay. So now a kind of general interesting question, which I think a lot of people's talks have touched on, is how do you kind of combine these two ideas? So maybe I have some anions and I have some kind of symmetry protection. And so now maybe and I want to put them together, right? In some kind of non-trivial way. So one of the ways that this can happen, for example, is your anions can have fractional charges under the symmetry. And actually, interestingly, historically, in condensed matter, the earliest examples, probably the most familiar examples of topological phases, have this property. So, I think a lot of the discussion of a lot of the serious discussion of topological phases started with the fractional quantum Hall effect, which has this, property that I have anions, which means, I have quasiparticles, which can be described by, for example, in the simplest cases, U1 level K Chern-Simons theory, and they also carry fractional electromagnetic charge, right? So that's a familiar example. Another familiar example is, spin liquid states, which, go back to Phil Anderson's kind of idea of resonating valence bond physics, right? Where we have some kind of emergent Z2 anions, which also carry spin a half, which is fractional relative to the, kind of local excitations in the Hilbert space. So it's just a little historical digression, which I think is kind of entertaining, is that we spent all this time talking about topological order and only recently started formalizing the notion of symmetry protection, but it's certainly been there for a long time. Okay, so that's a rather general introduction. Oh yeah, so sorry, I should say the words that we associate with putting these two ideas together are symmetry-enriched topological phases. Okay, so now the specific question that I want to talk about today is the following thing. So one way to get from a symmetry-protected phase to a symmetry-enriched phase is to gauge some part of the symmetry. So, and I, have to apologize to the mathematicians in the crowd because I'm going to talk pretty much exclusively about one example of this, or one family of examples of this, which are two-dimensional symmetry-protected phases which have the discrete symmetry, a Z2 symmetry, which in condensed matter is familiar as Ising symmetry, and combined with time reversal. Okay? So one way to try to turn this into a symmetry-enriched phase is just to gauge this Z2. So if I gauge this Z2, I'm going to get some kind of topological order. And that topological order might inherit some interesting properties under time reversal from this time reversal component of the group. Okay? So this is a way to get an SET. And the question actually that I'd like to talk about is whether this mapping from SPT to SET is one-to-one. Okay. So to address that question, let me begin by telling you about the phases with this combined symmetry. So the first phase is just an ordinary Ising paramagnet, okay, which if people aren't familiar with that, I can explain it, but I presume most of you are. Okay. And so this ordinary Ising paramagnet, that's Z2 symmetry, global Z2. And basically, if we put in kind of defects of this symmetry, of this Z2 symmetry, so kind of what when we gauge them will become fluxes, they can transform under time reversal with either T squared or plus or, is plus or minus one. And there's also, as Michael and Zheng Cheng pointed out in a paper a few years back, there's another kind of two-dimensional system with Z2 symmetry, which I'm going to call the twisted Ising paramagnet. Okay? And again, you could sort of try to think about this model in the context of having symmetry defects transform with T squared as one and T squared as minus one. Now, there's question, which probably some of you have about this, which I will address in a few slides, which has to do with the statistics of these defects in this other theory. So you know who you are, just hang on a sec. Okay, so let me begin by talking about these two possibilities here. The ordinary, yeah.
There are two types of water seeds. Which type, are they transforming the same way?
In these theories here. Right, so that's the question that I want to address in a couple slides. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, so let me start by talking about the ordinary Ising paramagnets and what will happen when we gauge the symmetry. Okay, so now here it's nothing at all surprising happens. Okay, I have an ordinary Ising paramagnet, and I told you that I can choose it such that time reversal acts on this symmetry defect, such that t squared is equal to 1. So I gauge the z2, okay? Now, in this case, as I think most of you know, okay, so now I take my ordinary Ising paramagnet and I gauge it, and I get an ordinary Ising gauge theory, right? Which has bulk flux defects, which are, you know, time reversal. They map into themselves under time reversal, a time reversal invariant. And so depending on which way t squared acts in this group, I can have t squared as plus 1 or t squared is minus 1. So obviously, you know, these defects, the action of symmetry on these defects is different in the bulk, and these are certainly two different symmetry-enriched phases.
How many dimensions?
2 plus 1d, yeah. Yeah. good. Okay, so now the sort of less obvious claim is that if I look at the twisted Ising paramagnets, okay, these two twisted Ising paramagnets, and I gauge the z2, I actually end up with the same bulk phase, but with what you might think of as different boundaries. Okay, so that's what I'd like to explain. So now, before I go into the details, let me address Chenji's question, which is the following thing. So there's a kind of important and extremely qualitative difference between the two gauged versions of these two things, right? Which is that, so the ordinary Ising gauge theory, right? I mean, I have E and M, and they both are achiral particles. When I gauge the twisted Ising paramagnet, what I get actually is something which you can think of as a kind of two-layer system. So I wrote nu equals 1/2 and nu equals minus 1/2 for the condensed matter physicists, but probably for this audience, it's better to say this is U1 level 2 Chern-Simons, and this is U1 level minus 2 Chern-Simons, right? And so the system just basically has this structure of a doubled Chern-Simons theory, okay? I'm going to refer to this as the doubled semion model, or doubled semion theory. And the important thing is that, so obviously, you know, these two layers, which are there in my construction, are chiral, and so as Chenjie pointed out, there's basically two types of symmetry defects, one of which lives in the top layer and one of which lives in the bottom layer. And under time reversal, they get exchanged, okay? So basically, time reversal exchanges the fluxes in the top and bottom layers. So this leads to a slight kind of hitch in trying to think about this, which is that, you know, in the bulk, these defects don't actually have t squared or plus or minus 1, because these defects don't get mapped to themselves under time reversal. They get mapped into each other. So you might, at this point, and I suspect some people several slides ago were worried, well, you know, how can you even talk about t squared as plus or minus 1 in this doubled semion model? And to answer that question, we actually have to think about the possible boundaries of the doubled semion model. So remember, in the bulk, time reversal exchanges the semion and the anti-semion. But if I want to make a gapped boundary of this system, basically, so Michael showed that, you know, there's one and only one way to do this, which is to condense a boson. And the boson that you have at your disposal in this theory is basically the bound state of the semion and anti-semion. Okay, this is a boson. I can certainly condense it. And I drew a little picture here where this blue region is where my boson is uncondensed, and I have my doubled semion gauge theory. Okay, and up here, I've condensed the boson. And now I have, you know, some kind of trivial phase. And the important thing is that, okay, and this little red line was supposed to be a semion who comes to the boundary. And at the boundary, if I act with time reversal, right, it takes the semion to the anti-semion, But the anti-semion is just the product of this boson with the semion, and so if the boson is condensed, these two are now physically indistinguishable. So we can talk about, it does make sense to ask, is T squared or plus or is equal to plus or minus one at the boundary? Do you guys have a question?
I don't know the rules of the game. And so my question was whether I was allowed to take a linear combination of the defects. And Davide said no.
So a state which is a superposition of semion and anti-semion and map it into itself under time reversal. No, but I'm not sure I have like a really crisp answer to why you shouldn't do that. I mean, it's sort of related to this business of, you know, usually we talk about kind of these irreducible quasi-particles. And so I think, you know, when we define T squared, we want to define it on irreducible quasi-particles. Well, they don't have spin in the, like, is that what you mean? You mean like conformal spin?
Fractional spin, right?
Well, it's a spin in this particle into plus one dimension, so you can get
it. Oh, yeah. So, right. So basically, it's like half a fermion. So
it's a quarter.
Yeah.
Can you distinguish a quarter from minus a quarter?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So one quarter and minus a quarter.
So this guy on which T is square is either plus or minus one.
Right. So that's the thing, is like in the bulk we have a quarter and minus a quarter, and time reversal exchanges them. So the point is, at the boundary, I've actually condensed this bound state, which is the one quarter and the minus a quarter. And so once that's condensed, right? So I act with time reversal, and the one quarter guy goes into the minus a quarter guy, but the minus a quarter guy is really just the you know, it's just this one quarter guy combined with a boson. So the bosons are condensed, and so like physically you can't tell the difference between something that has and hasn't fused with a boson. And so at the boundary you should really think of those as the same excitation. Does that? Cool.
What does condensed mean?
Well, I have in a couple slides I will write down a wave function, which if that qualifies as a definition.
Doesn't modify the Hamiltonian so that it doesn't do anything to create this particle?
Yes. So I'll tell you about the Hamiltonian.
So
you know it from your talk.
So you know it's one on SS bar, which is representation of Z2. So just the equivalent of that.
So it's like a quotient,
okay, good. Next time I teach like statistical mechanics, that's what I'll tell the students. Good. Okay. Good. Okay. So.
So I'm sorry. So this theory is the one with the equal plus one or minus one. Where did you have this story with the plus or minus a quarter?
Let me go back. Right. So there's four models. There's two which you gauge and you just get ordinary Eisen gauge theory, which, right, like just ordinary Z2 lattice gauge theory. And then there are these other two, which, and either of these, so twisted Eisen paramagnet just refers to what's going on with the Z2 symmetry, not with time reversal. And so when you gauge that kind of Z2 symmetry, you get this, you know, you get this thing, which is, you know, U1 level 2 times U1 level minus 2, which has this spin a quarter and spin minus a quarter guys in it. And then, what I've tried to argue is that if you want to make any statements at all about T squared as plus or minus one, what you need to do in this system is you need to look at the boundary where I've condensed this boson, where, you know, really I should think of the S and the S bar, or the spin a quarter, spin minus a quarter particles as equivalent.
Fiona, I'm confused there. So you condense the boson, the bulk is completely trivial, right?
Yeah. So up here, it's trivial.
But then, how the boundary scale non-trivial? That's because the time to work is in between.
Well, so remember, so right, so it's a boundary between the semion system and the trivial phase. Yeah, and so the point is that I bring a semion to the boundary, and now at the boundary, I actually can't distinguish between the semion and anti-semion. So far, all I've tried to say is at the boundary, it at least makes sense to talk about t squared as plus 1 and t squared as minus 1.
It's the same thing as to say, you know, every decade, they probably don't speak the language. So double semi has two different boundary conditions, given by super 2 indecomposable modules. That the transition between them, the previous gap is. So if that's the picture you draw, the black line seems to suggest a transition between two different boundary conditions.
No. This is the semion model, and this is the trivial phase. Yeah. I'll talk about the boundary between two different boundary conditions later. Right, and that's what I'm going to come to. So far, basically, all I've tried to convince you of is that it at least makes sense to talk about t squared as plus or minus one at the boundary. Yeah.
So in the book, you mean t squared to minus 1, you mean semion to anti-semion, anti-semion to minus semion?
No, so like really, in the bulk, when these guys get permuted under time reversal, you know, I think that's just, then it's not really t squared is plus or minus 1, it's just, you know.
Just a plus. S2 is by S plus, so t squared is plus.
It's not the natural vector space. That's
it's actually a category.
So it makes no sense to say it's a number when you square it. Right?
It's not a category.
The tensor, the square gives you the same order tensor by something. Multiplied by a number.
That was the initial paradox. You start with this as to t phases where you can really think of the s and s bar as defect, and there you can define t squared on the defect. But now once you gauge this into symmetry, S and S bar now correspond to two different topological sectors. So you know, it becomes, now you cannot really assign T squared, meaningful T squared to them in the bulk.
Yeah.
So that's part of the resolution of the
right.
Sorry, one more question.
Yeah.
When you say twisted, does that mean when you gauge you make a weighted sum by the cocycle? Is that what twisted means?
Yeah, so I mean, right, so this is like a twisted gauge theory in the sense of like that graph wouldn't, yeah.
So what is the t squared plus or minus one
epsilon? Right, so once I've gauged the symmetry,
yeah.
the we're acting on the semions at the boundary only. These guys, when we bring them to the boundary. Good, okay, so t squared is plus or minus one at the boundary. So the question is, you know, are the phases with t squared is plus and minus one distinct? As symmetry projected phases before I actually gauge the Z2, and in that case, the answer is yes. Okay, and B for the doubled semion model, and there I'm going to explain the answer is actually no. Okay, so. All right, so basically, the rest of the talk I'm going to try and explain why the answer is no, and what I'm going to talk about is probably what Zenhana alluded to actually, which is that in a sense there are two kinds of boundaries that you can give to this model, which correspond to two different kinds of Bose condensates I could write down, okay, and then I'll give a kind of simplistic argument of you know what gauging the symmetry does and why the even just by looking at the boundary, you can see that the gauge case is different from the ungauged case. And then for entertainment, I'll tell you a little bit about an actual explicit lattice model construction. And if we have time at the end, I'll tell you something amusing about kind of boundaries between these things. Yeah.
Question about this trivial phase. So the trivial phase is you have time reversal symmetry, right? Maybe it's my ignorance. I don't know. Is there any different time reversal symmetry protected trivial SPT phase there. If there are two kinds of trivial phase, then the boundary maybe corresponds to.
Oh, sorry. So the two different kinds of boundaries. Yeah. So they're not. No, that's the thing.
Yeah.
They're not distinct phases. So you can make a gapped symmetric boundary between them.
So the true phase is no matter.
Yeah.
The two faces when you connect.
Yeah, them, yeah, they're not.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly, and that's yeah. So that's kind of important that it's not something that you can attribute to these two boundaries being in different phases. It's something that yeah.
So again, very naively, this is U1 level 2 and U1 level minus 2.
Yeah.
So there's an obvious boundary condition for this, such as there's nothing on the boundary. The gauge field for one equals the gauge field of the other. Roughly speaking, I double the
yeah.
system and just at U1 level 2 everywhere. But then what does T act on?
So
T keeps changing roughly concept 1 equals minus 1.
Sorry?
Sorry.
Well, so T is acting on, so basically, you know, I have this picture, and so basically it's, so up here, you know, you're right, like if I, you know, up here I have just, you know, there's nothing really interesting up here at all, it's totally trivial, right? But I could imagine bringing, okay, one of these, like, you know, the Wilson line from one of the two copies, and I could imagine bringing it to the boundary. Right? And the boundary, okay, you're identifying these two gauge fields, so now it's kind of agnostic as to which copy it's in. But it's still an excitation that I could bring to the boundary. Right? Does that...
So, is there something on the boundary or not?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can, right, so you can, and I mean, I'll go through this both in a lattice model and also kind of in a field theoretic description of how to think about what kinds of excitations can live on this boundary. Yeah, yeah. But there, it's that's right. I mean, I can bring the semion to the boundary. The semions aren't like confined on the boundary or anything like that. Good, okay, right. So let me start by just going over, okay, so there are two, in a sense, distinct kinds of Bose condensates. So remember that the Bose condensates that we're talking about are just bound states of these two guys. And of course, semions or anti-semions, they always have to come in pairs. That's kind of a constraint of the TQFT. So I always have an even number of bosons, okay? And then the kind of usual wave function, I mean, I kind of want to think about this being, you know, maybe on a lattice or something like that. But basically, the usual Bose condensate is I just sum over all possible numbers of pairs, right? And the sum over the possible positions of the bosons, of all the bosons that I've made. And then basically the difference between these two Bose condensates is I'm also allowed to put in a phase factor, right, which counts the number of pairs of bosons, okay? Now, if I want to talk about time reversal, I certainly want my Bose condensate to be time reversal invariant. So that gives me two choices for this phase. It can have you know, it can be zero or pi. So I can have a phase of plus one or a phase of minus one for each boson pair that I add. Right, okay, so why does this make a difference? Well, there's a kind of nice, simple cartoon picture of why it makes a difference. So let's imagine that we start with one of these semion excitations that we brought to the boundary, okay? And we now apply time reversal. So we know that time reversal changes the semion into an anti-semion, okay? And we also know that the anti-semion is just this boson times the semion, okay? So here I have my semion, and then I also have this boson, right? And so these strings are telling you that, you know, really these particles live at the end of strings, and you can think of the string as going, you know, maybe it goes somewhere else on the boundary, maybe it goes off to minus infinity, okay? But here I have the semion at a boson, which is the anti-semion, okay? Okay, and now, you know, I mean, this is a Bose condensate, so this boson can wander off if it wants to. And now I apply time reversal again, right? And I create a second boson, okay? Which means I get to erase this dotted line, reminding me that the bosons had to come in pairs, because I've already got a pair of bosons, right? And so when we walk through this process, so I apply time reversal twice, and what I get back is my semion state with a pair of bosons, okay? In other words, T squared creates one pair of bosons, and that tells you that the action of time reversal is actually going to depend on how I pick this phase theta in my Bose condensate. Good. Okay. So that's a kind of very naive picture of the two types of boundary conditions. Now, I wanted to just very briefly explain kind of what happens when you gauge the symmetry that, really kind of makes these two edges equivalent. So this is the theory for what lives on the boundary, right? So I have a right-moving chiral boson and a left-moving chiral boson. And since I have a right mover and a left mover, I'm allowed to add some terms that gap them out, okay? And then basically, depending on the value of theta here, there's I should pick one of the following two time reversal transformations. So basically, either I just exchange these two guys, right? Or I exchange them, and one of the fields also gets an extra phase of pi. Okay, one of them has t squared as plus 1, and one of them has t squared as minus 1. Okay, right, and yeah, and I just want to emphasize, you know, which one you should choose really depends on what how you gap the edge out. In other words, which Bose condensate you pick.
What's theta here?
Oh, sorry, so theta was, remember, yeah, sorry, it's back here. So theta was just, when I pick my Bose condensate, I get to pick a phase of plus or minus 1 for each pair of bosons I create.
Okay, so 0 or pi.
0 or pi, yeah, 0 or pi.
That's what this two choices depend
on? Yeah, that's right. So, you know, basically, like, you know, the fields want to minimize this term here, right? And so what the expectation values of phi 1 and phi 2 should be to do that will depend on theta. Okay, and then so you know, if theta is pi, like, you basically want phi 1 minus phi 2 to be on. So the gauge symmetry doesn't act on theta, but it acts on, good. So the gauge symmetry acts on phi 1 and phi 2 in the following way. So this again was worked out in Michael and Zeng Chang's paper that basically one of them gets shifted by pi, and the other one just maps to itself. Okay. So the point is actually that these two time reversal transformations are gauge equivalent. Yeah, exactly. Right. So in a sense, you should attribute this difference to the choice of boundary condition. This is not a property that comes from the bulk.
But can you explain, you know, why is theta correlated with this choice of T transformation?
So here's the kind of very like cartoon picture, right? Which is, I apply time reversal. So this dotted line, you know, this red line represents a semion string, right? So I'm kind of thinking of some lattice model where the anions live at the endpoints of strings, right? So I apply time reversal, and I turn my semion into an antisemion. What that really means is I still have my semion, but I've also created a boson, okay? And then I apply it again, right? And I've created a second boson.
Can I see also from the Hamilton this boundary?
Oh yes, you definitely can. So basically, so if theta is zero, right? Basically, what I want is, you know, phi one is phi two, or equivalently, phi one is phi two plus pi, right? Those both give me minima of the cosine.
Yeah.
And if theta is pi, what you want is phi one minus phi two is plus or minus pi over 2.
Okay.
And then but then if you exchange phi one and phi two, then you actually need in the second case to have this shift. Good. Right. So yeah. So the point is, these two time reversal transformations are gauge equivalent. So certainly, these had better not be different bulk phases. Okay. So that's one.
I'm a little confused about that statement. So you should just, I would think what you want to do is fix the action of time reversal on the edge once and for all, and then you can talk about different terms you add to your Hamiltonian. And do they gap the edge? Do they not gap the edge? Do they break time reversal symmetry? Do they not break time reversal symmetry? But is it just a matter of convenience that you're changing the way you define time reversal to analyze two different Hamiltonians? I mean, normally I would fix the symmetry,
right,
and then define different Hamiltonians rather than both varying Hamiltonian and symmetry simultaneously.
In what you're saying, there's a way to think about, you know, okay, so these, so you know, these two things are gauge equivalent. How is it you can even have two different edges? And the point is, like, right, so the point is that depending on which gapping term you pick, right, so each of these two, sorry, let me put it back up. Each of these gapping terms, right, has, so for theta is 0, theta is pi, has a time reversal transformation. But they're different time reversal transformations They're also related by gauge transformation.
So if you wanted to, you could tell us the entire story using one of those two transformations, and then maybe you'd have to write your Dacking term a little differently or something, I'm not sure, but you should be able to just fix the time reversal and tell us the whole story that way if you wanted to, but you've chosen to. Is that right?
Well, so... I mean, but
I mean, you have a microscopic definition of time reversal, right? So I would think in your field theory, you would have like a fixed definition of time reversal, and then you would tell us, I can gap the edge one way, I can gap the edge another way. In one case, I get a Cramer's degeneracy when I bring
right.
the excitation here. In the other case, I don't.
So you have Z2-T symmetry, and you have Z2-gauge symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
And then this cosine kind of spontaneously breaks this product group to a single Z2T tilde group, and depending on theta, you know, that Z2-tilde group can be either the upper line or the lower line. So it's like the Higgs condensate. You want to choose the symmetry which the Higgs condensate respects. And that symmetry,
yeah, that's
what,
okay.
I don't understand. First of all, I mean, answer the word Higgs here, and second, I'm not for the word spontaneous.
So
this is not spontaneous to break any symmetry.
This semion condensing on the boundary, you can kind of think of that as a Higgs.
Actually, I'm much more confused about that. I don't even understand what the first proposal means. Before we go to the cosine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
my understanding is that you have a John Simons theory in the bulk, you have to pick boundary conditions. And there's no unique boundary condition. There's a preferred one. Well, for example, you can always add another decoupled field there.
Oh.
That's trivial. But even if not, there could be different things that fit the same anomaly. Now, in this particular theory, I think there's no anomaly at all. So there is a boundary condition that there's really nothing on the boundary. So the boundary, so you have U1 times U1, so set the gauge to the boundary condition, and the gauge field of 1 equals to the gauge field of the other.
Yeah, so I think that in this, so okay, so first the question is, you know, why are there not more chiral fields? And I think, you know, the basic answer to that is just we picked the minimal boundary corresponding to each of the Trans Simons theories.
Why are there any at all?
Right, no. So the one that there is none really corresponds to when I add this, you know, I take this G to infinity, and so now all these fields are gapped out.
The question is whether I can have this cosine for a single field. Because why not cosine terms also with just logs pi for some vacuum?
Why could I add a cosine of phi?
That's not cosine.
Sorry, that's a chiral boson, sorry.
Yeah.
But I think this system doesn't really need anything on the boundary because it has no anomaly. The minimum one is nothing on the boundary.
Yeah.
Now we can start adding stuff. There's a lot of stuff that we can add. And I don't see why this is good.
I think she means there's two minimum ones. There are two nothing on the boundary. This cosine term is a gap the boundary out.
Yes.
But maybe there are two ways to gap out. You get a two different gap the boundary. So there are two nothing on the boundary.
Yeah, probably like the theta zero corresponds to
a
trivial way.
With
the
symmetry.
I don't think so. This system still has some spectrum.
No, it's a gap.
It's gap, but it has a spectrum. You gap the spectrum, but there's still some spectrum.
You don't care about
the minimal boundary condition. You might or might not care about it. The minimal boundary condition doesn't even care that. The boundary condition is A1 equals A2 on the boundary. There's nothing on the boundary.
There are not some.
It's not just that it's gap. There's nothing.
No, but you don't care about gap.
Well, there are some.
Okay. You might or might not care. I have a minimal boundary condition such that it's gapped. And it's not just gap.
I think if I send G to infinity, I mean, I could send the gap of the boundary to infinity and recover your spectrum.
A1 to A2 something, because suppose you have a cylinder, you put this A1 to A2 boundary on both sides of the cylinder, then the two boundaries actually have a degeneracy. So that means you can build the boundary have a set, even for this so-called trivial boundary, the boundary is not totally trivial. You know, totally trivial boundary is that's a on a cylinder, you know, on a cylinder or anything, there is the two boundary have no degeneracy. On one boundary of the disk, there's no degeneracy, but two boundary of the cylinder may have a degeneracy.
What I'm saying is so trivial. there's a boundary condition, an office boundary condition, which is often used.
Yeah.
That you just double the system.
Yeah.
And you say that what you call gauge field number one here is really gauge field number two there. So then it's obvious that there's nothing on the boundary. You pass through it, there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. So it's not that you have options.
But you find nothing. Nothing is there. I think which are acceptable. If there's a gap, we sort of ignore all the stuff, which is find the gap, right? Above the ground.
I thought the question here was, what are the allowed gap things that we can have on the boundary?
No, but to identify different gaps things is only deeper in the UV sort of properties. If the ground state is the same, you still get the same boundary condition. So this is fully gap. So it's equivalent to the one you like.
And but then the thing is that I don't have two choices.
There's a special one.
The question is, has to discover that. Well, these two choices that you have, is it intrinsic to the system, or is it only because of the way you decided to analyze it? And since there's a way of analyzing it, there's neither phi one nor phi two, and I don't see any twofold choice. Not clear why this is intrinsic.
Can I think of them as A1 equal to A2 and A1 equal to minus A2?
No, because you can flip the sign. Faithfully.
But if I decided to the bar T acts by changing A1 and A2, that would make a
difference.
Yeah, with right. So without time reversal, you probably don't care what
yeah.
it is.
You can change your theta continuously without time reversal. But with time reversal,
there's another Z in the problem, and you said that you define T to be another one. The system has
ticket A1 and A2 are exchanged. Once you make the choice, there are two boundary conditions.
One of them breaks this team, the other does not.
Right. Once you kind of fix to one of these two time reversal transformations, then there's a unique boundary which respects that.
And there's a difference between boundary conditions for your theory and boundary conditions that are compatible with the time symmetry of just
Yeah, so picking then A1 equal to A2 is a boundary condition. A1 equal to minus A2 is another boundary condition. They're both T invariant.
But for a different T?
No, for the same T, sending A1 to A2.
Yeah.
You want
okay.
to take the same T and change the boundary condition.
No, in the bulk, you have a T, which is fixed.
Yeah, you have a T in the bar.
Right,
the
right.
The bar is fixed. You don't want to change it.
Right.
And then you change boundary condition.
Good.
In the bulk, you also have two different charges on the gate. Given the sign of A1,
let's fix a particular T in the bulk. The question is how many T invariant boundary conditions you have there on the bulk.
So there's a question of what you do with the other C's. So there's C1 that flips the sign of A1, C2 flips the sign of A2.
Yeah.
There's T that flips the exchange step. Now, the boundary conditions break some of that, and the rest is not broken.
I think they're ignoring C. They're focusing on T. And then
That's okay. I mean, I do think that the standard kind of way that we think about this in condensed matter would be that, you know, once I have this term, I can send G to infinity, and then that really gives me something that's trivial in the infrared. Like, you know, there's nobody lives on the boundary. But the point is that there's actually two different ways to do that if I care about time reversal symmetry.
All right. For the second choice, does a shift the force thing by 2 pi? Right?
What's the difference? Yeah. Oh. Well. So that's the point. I mean, like the time reversal had better, you know, not change this guy. But so the point is, if you look at the expectation values of the fields, if theta is pi, right, then the two minima are phi 1 minus phi 2 are plus or minus pi over 2. So if you interchange phi 1 and phi 2, you interchange the plus and the minus ones. And so then you want to have this. Yeah. Okay, good. Okay, so the other thing is, who's, like, how much time do I?
Oh, I'm the boss here.
Are you the boss?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure.
20 minutes.
Okay. Just maybe.
Based on past experience, a few hours. But 25 minutes.
Yeah, okay. So sounds good. So for entertainment's sake, mostly, I wanted to walk you through an explicit kind of lattice construction of these two boundaries. And in order to do that, I wanted to briefly remind you of the explicit lattice construction of the semion model. Okay, so this is a construction which was the construction we're using was described in a paper by Levin and Nguyen. Okay, and the idea is, so it's a commuting projector Hamiltonian. It has two pieces. One piece which acts as on vertices. Okay, sorry, and you know, basically I'm putting, so each edge in the system has two possible states, which I'm gonna call sigma z is or plus and minus one. Okay. And then I have a vertex term which tells me that I want to have an even number of edges with sigma z is minus one at each vertex. So here I've colored them. This is good, this is bad. Okay. And then the second term is a term that acts on the plaquettes of the system, and what it does is it flips the spin on each edge. Okay. And there's also a term which multiplies the result by a phase. Okay, the precise form of this term isn't very important for our purposes, but basically what the result of it is that in the ground state, anytime you change the number of loops, okay, you go from anytime you change the number of loops, you get a minus sign. Okay, so whereas if you just deform the loops, you get plus sign. Good. Okay, and so the ground state has this nice kind of loop gas form where it's a sum over all of the possible patterns of loops with a factor of minus one to the number of loops. Okay, good. So now let me talk about the two kinds of boundaries in this model. So in order to discuss that, what we care about, obviously, are the operators that create these bosons in this Samyon model. Okay. And so obviously, you know, the bosons come in pairs. They should be not chiral, which means that the operator that creates a boson pair this way and the operator that creates a boson pair this way should commute. Okay. And obviously, creating two bosons on the same site gives me nothing, so that operator should square to one. And the bulk. And so the obvious choice is just to make an excitation. If I just act with sigma z, remember the plaquette term has this product over sigma x times phase terms. These are diagonal and sigma z. So if I just act with a sigma z on a bunch of edges, I'm going to make a boson at each end of that collection of edges. Okay. So this is the operator that creates a boson. So now how do I make a Bose condensate in part of my system? Well, all I have to do is add this guy to my Hamiltonian. Okay, it commutes with the vertex term and obviously does not commute with the plaquette term. And then, okay, I add it with some coefficient. Maybe I put another coefficient h in front of my plaquette term. And then I crank the ratio of g over h up to infinity, right? And when I do that, basically I can think of the Hamiltonian as just being this term here, which just penalizes having any spin downs at all. Okay, so here's a rather nicer looking illustration of this. So little triangles represent the fact that I have this vertex projector everywhere. Okay, the little squares represent edges on which I've acted with this sigma z term. Okay, and then the dots represent plaquettes where I act with the plaquette term of the Samyon model. So what this picture is showing is down here, I have a doubled Samyon phase, okay? And up here, I have my condensed phase, okay? And
that's a spin down, all spin down phase, right?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I'll spin down or I'll spin up, whichever, depending on depending on how you choose it. But yeah, it's like it is literally a product ground state. It is trivial in the most obvious sense of the word. Good, and okay, and it's really easy to convince yourself that, you know, if you act with this operator that creates boson pairs in the bulk, you can then bring them to the boundary, and once they get to the boundary, they can just disappear off in here. So this really does look like what you'd call a Bose condensate, okay? Again, this operator squares to one, so we would expect this to correspond to the theta is equal to zero Bose condensate. And you'll note, okay, and this observation will probably make a little more sense in a couple of slides. You'll note that, you know, when I bring these Samyon guys to the boundary, I mean, it's kind of, I don't have to do anything weird to my Hamiltonian. Okay, there's no reason to look at this and expect I have any kind of extra degeneracy at the boundary. Okay, so that's Bose condensate number one, which I think a lot of you are familiar with. Here's Bose condensate number two. So here's another operator, which, now, okay, it acts with sigma z on this edge between a pair of plaquettes, but it also sandwiches that between BP1 and BP2. Okay? Now, so this operator, just like the other operator, it will, you know, it can create, annihilate, or hop bosons. But what these factors of BP do for you is, so if I start in a state with no bosons, right, the eigenvalue of BP is plus one on both of these plaquettes, right? So I first act with BP2, that gives me plus one. Now I act with sigma Z, okay? I'm allowed to say Z because we are in Canada. And that changes the eigenvalue of BP on both of these plaquettes, okay? And now I measure BP1, right? So if I create a pair of bosons, I get a minus one. Similarly, if I annihilate a pair of bosons, I also get a minus one. But if I hop them between one plaquette or the other, right, then basically I would measure one here, I would then hop it over here, and then I would measure, sorry, I'd measure, say, minus one here, I hop the boson over here, and then I measure minus one over here again, right? So this is a kind of explicit lattice construction of exactly what you expect for the theta is equal to pi condensate. Good, okay. So here's a picture of the Hamiltonian for this boundary. So again, here's the semion region here. These are just plaquette terms. Okay, and then up here, I have this kind of these two plaquette terms connected by a dotted line with this yellow square in the middle. So that represents the BP, sigma Z, BP term. Okay. Now, okay, good. So here's the other condensate. Here's the semion region. Now, in this case, something actually a little bit funny happens if we try and end the semion strings on the edge. So this is a slightly technical point, but for people who've ever kind of played with these models, if you basically what you want to do is end this semion string on the edge, and you want to do that in a time reversal invariant way. Okay, so in order to have the semion string kind of end up here without causing lots of trouble, you basically have to kind of modify the plaquette operators, and in particular, there's a way to do it. And I've drawn a picture which I think will be suggestive to some of you. But there's a way to do it, but that way basically involves making the plaquette operator on plaquette 5 not time reversal invariant, explicitly not time reversal invariant. Okay. So that means that, you know, if I want to end this string without breaking time reversal, I actually want to modify my Hamiltonian locally right at the endpoint of this string. And in particular, I want to remove all operators that involve BP5. Okay. So now, naively, you might think, oh my goodness, that creates a huge degeneracy because I have to take out 1,5 and 2,5 and 3,5 and 4,5. But of course, I can put back in these combinations here, like BP1, sigma Z, BP2, and so on. Okay. So at the end of the day, basically, I just get a twofold degeneracy associated with the possible eigenvalues of this plaquette operator here. Okay. And this is exactly the Cramer's degeneracy. Okay. And you can actually explicitly show that, okay, as you would expect, t squared is equal to minus 1 on this edge. OK. So, yeah?
So I have to understand a bit better. So this semion string is an operator that acts on the.
Yes.
But here you're modifying the Hamiltonian.
Yeah.
How do I understand?
OK, good. There's no problem. Okay, so there's no problem writing down kind of closed loop semion string operators with. So let me say something first about the. I mean, so these phase terms in this Hamiltonian. If you don't worry about semion strings ending, they can be written in an explicitly real form. Okay, they just always give plus or minus one. If you want to terminate a semion string, though, then like, if you want to do it in any sensible way from the point of view of the TQFT, you actually have to have some other phase terms which turn out to be complex, okay? And the minimal thing that you can do to make that work out, oops. Yeah, so the minimal thing that you can do to make that work out is you can basically put all of that problem, all of that complexness onto one plaquette. But you can't do better than that. Yeah. Okay.
So
all right.
What is the other phase in this new boundary? The previous transparency. So you draw, now the trivial phase is boson condensed. Is that the same as before, or there's a
like as a phase? Is it the same
no,
as before?
As a, spin state, how spin point to in this case?
Oh yeah, okay, good. So
are they pointing the same way or they have different
Right, so before I just had these triangles which basically picked out one of the two edge states on each edge. So that had a product ground state.
Yeah.
So now with this like this BP sigma z BP, so the BPs do introduce loops, right?
Yeah.
So it's not a product state in the sense that the other one is. But
still
they're in the same
entangled, but
yeah. Yeah.
These SPD states are still trivial states.
So no, it's actually in the same phase.
As the trivial phase.
As the just a different
just
wave
a different
function. Yeah. And that actually plays an important role in the last thing that I wanted to talk about, which is what I'm going to call trijunctions. So the question you can ask now is, what happens if I do this? So on the bottom down here, I have my doubled semion region, okay? And then I just have two regions. Sorry, so in this picture, alpha is what I was calling theta. So I have two regions, you know, one of which has my first theta is equal to zero Bose condensate. And so on this boundary, I have t squared to plus one semions. And the other region has this theta is equal to pi condensate. And on the boundary, I have t squared is minus one semions. And we know actually that because these guys, you know, they have to be in the same phase. There's no other phase for me to choose from, that they do admit a gapped time reversal invariant boundary between them. Right? So here, so all of these boundaries are gapped, right? And the question is, does anything kind of special or interesting happen here? And the answer is yes. And you can see this explicitly in the exactly solvable model, although I don't want to go through that. And the reason is because you can construct a time reversal invariant gap boundary, but it's not exactly solvable, and the construction is a little bit technically involved. However, the result that one arrives at is that, so time reversal relates, right, so if I now take this system and I act with time reversal symmetry, okay, what it actually does in terms of the operators and the theory is it basically creates a semion string which runs along this kind of boundary and connects the two branch points the two triple points, right, between these three different regions. So this is a non-local operator, right? And this basically implies, okay, that with, you know, with time reversal symmetry, okay, so it has to map between these two different states, and obviously they have to be degenerate. So rather than explain this in the exactly solvable model, I want to take just a couple minutes to give you kind of the flavor of how it works in the field theory. So here's another picture of my kind of trijunction. Okay, and so in VEC1, I have, you know, two different ground states which are related by a Z2 transformation. Let's call them A and A bar. And in VEC2, I have two different ground states, right, which are related, again, by time reversal transformation. By a Z2 gauge transformation. Let's call them B and B bar. Right, and obviously, you know, we want this edge to be kind of invariant under our Z2 gauge symmetry. So the sensible choices to make for the states of the boundary are either AB plus A bar B bar or AB bar plus A bar B. Okay, and to be slightly more explicit about this in terms of the field theory, right? So here are my two different gapped edges. Here are my four different possible states. And now you can see, actually, if you look at the form of these states, that so you can actually pick either one of these time reversal transformations. Okay, so one of them will map A to itself and B to B bar, right? And the other will map B to itself but A to A bar. Okay. So although I have two possible choices of time reversal symmetry, whichever one I pick, they basically exchange, you know, these two states. Okay. So again, so this is just a kind of the field theoretic view of what I said before, which is we have this twofold degeneracy for every pair of domain walls. Okay. And the other thing is, you know, basically the operator which maps, if I want to get, you know, from this state here to this state here, you know, what I have to do is basically map B bar to B and B to B bar. Okay, and it turns out that the operator that does this, and this has to do with the commutators in the fields of the bosonized edge, but the operator that does this actually basically tunnels a semion across this region here. Okay. does that. Good, so that's the end of what I wanted to say. So basically the brief summary is we start with two distinct SPT phases, but actually once we gauge the symmetry, we only get one SET. The reason for this is that there are these two quote unquote different, not different phases, but different in some important way, kinds of gap boundaries for the doubled Samion model. Okay. And the final thing is this entertaining observation that if you make a trijunction between the three, you actually get this like symmetry protected degeneracy. Thanks.
Any more questions?
Yeah, so you have a twofold degenerates for a pair of trijunction. That sounds like a Marinellian mode. Is that something you want to interpret that way or?
Well, okay, so the first thing to say is that the degeneracy is protected by time reversal, so it's not a topological thing.
I see.
I mean,
time reversal,
yeah. If you break time reversal, you can definitely split those things. I mean, I think there are other examples.
Okay.
I think maybe Nate Linder had some other examples where you have like, you know, these symmetry protected degeneracies in 1D systems. Yeah.
Other questions?
There's no local order parameter with such system. For example, some local order parameter living exactly at the point.
Yeah, no. So I didn't put that in here, but yeah, you basically if you try to break this degeneracy with a local operator, you can check that your choices of local operators break time reversal. Is that what you mean?
No, what I mean is that here you have a degeneracy, but you say that it's not from time reversal symmetry is not broken.
Yeah.
But some sense, I was thinking that is there anything that could read symmetry breaking? So, but in some way, maybe it can be detected at the.
Yeah. No. So I think that's the thing. Like the local operators here that could detect this are not time reversal invariant.
You mean
just a statement.
Local order parameter cannot obtain any.
Well, if T is broken,
if it's not broken,
I think the statement is if T is unbroken, there's no local order parameter that you could like measure that could take on an expectation value, but only if T is unbroken. Yeah.
Maybe the real question is that if you only have the one boundary as a circle, you will have twofold degeneracy. So here you say when you have two trijunctions, you have twofold degeneracy.
Yeah.
The question is that suppose you don't have that, just have a single boundary, either first type or second type.
Oh,
do you
no.
have twofold degeneracy?
No.
So that's not the
yeah.
same.
No, and also the boundary between the two kinds of Bose condensates is also non-degenerate.
So only
yeah.
when you have two trijunctions.
Yeah, so it's really a property of the trijunction. Yeah.
Yeah.
Other questions? Okay, the next talk is at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Let's thank you again.